Like
Ladies and gentlemen, as always, welcome back to the one and only Mod State Podcast. It's another late Thursday night, but as always, my friend, I'm happy to be here with you.
Indeed. It's good to be here.
Yeah, so as always, we'll just get the pleasantries out of the way. If you like what you hear here on this podcast, head over to modstate.com for more op-ed pieces and links to the podcast, as well as a bunch of other fun stuff to look at. For those of you who are just tuning in, welcome for the wild ride into the 2020 presidential election. For those of you who have stuck around, thank you. Well, here we are. The one thing I feel ramping up to election season, which seems to just start earlier and earlier, of course, you know, I wasn't doing this in the last presidential election, but it just seems crazy that it's right around the corner already. But I think as we sit down to do these podcasts, I find it easier to reach for material to talk about. And certainly now that this whole Russia deal has been put to bed for now, we can actually talk about important things. Now, of course, if the outcome of the Russian special counsel had been more illuminating, if you will, we'd probably be talking about that still, but we're not. So, Mr. Former or Vice President, we'll just call him Vice President Joe Biden, has officially entered the race as of today.
And it's 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, Jesus. Well, for 76, I'll be lucky if I'm. Well, yeah. Anyway, good for him.
He was up having coffee at 4:30.
Jesus, yeah. He's posting his workouts to Instagram. And he, I'll be curious to see a couple things here. Obviously, our job here at this podcast, we're not here to report. We're trying to keep certain topics relevant, and we're trying to craft it in a way that if you listen to this in 2 weeks, it would still be relevant to you. So, yes, we do know that Joe Biden's entered the race. So if you listen to this 2 weeks later, it's not that that's old news. We're just setting the stage. So there's a couple things that we will have answers to very quickly, and that we'll see how much money he actually raises very quickly. And that is kind of a litmus test as to how he may do. However, I think it's pretty clear at this point that he would be maybe the front runner or the top candidate in the Democratic Party. I guess that's to be seen, but I think that'd be a fair assessment if you didn't have
he and Sanders,
have any data right in front of you. The Economist threw out a good article, and this was on, it was actually today. The title is Joe Biden Provides a Fossil Record of How the Democrats Have Changed.
Oh.
Now, this is true to a point. So how the Democrats have changed, and the piece points out a number of things. Obviously, it points out the tough on crime bill, talks about the obviously Anita Hill debacle, and which of note, you know, was sort of Joe Biden's way of getting an African-American onto the Supreme Court, but it just kind of backfired. And then there was also the busing in of what I believe it was at the time, like African-American kids from lower income areas to different schools, which I think sort of backfired in a way as well. So, you know, there's in the article also makes reference to certain things that, you know, looking back at Hillary Clinton's issues she had with Monica Lewinsky, her cynicism, etc. And it's showing that, yes, this fossil from an old Democratic Party to the new party, to which I say, I'm curious about where we are today with this new party. I think that we've come a long way from tough on crime. I think that's, you know, and I see the proverbial we, but I mean, and feel free to interject here, but there has been a good evolution, and there always is evolution. I think it's crazy to think that human beings can't evolve and their opinions and views can't change. And I think that shouldn't be, we shouldn't hold politicians to some other standard, but it seems like we sort of are, at least the Democratic Party or progressives are holding those in office to a higher standard in terms of their evolution on certain topics. So, for example, a millennial would be holding Joe Biden responsible for his policies on policing in maybe the 80s and 90s when they weren't even born. Now, you can hold people accountable, but when you have no real reference to maybe what the climate was at that time, like we all make wrong choices or we make mistakes or maybe the decisions we make were a bit misguided. But to me, it's...
Okay, well, the millennials, our belief is just to change the definition of what crime is. The royal you, but are you serious?
Well, and I guess what I'm alluding to more is, or what I'm trying to allude to is that for whatever reason, and I think I said this in precast, and you can tie in what Obama said, I think it was specifically about the party, was yes. That there's a loud, maybe they're a minority, but a very loud minority, and I think media plays into this a bit, that this progressive Democratic Party is looking for their Jesus Christ, but if they do find that person, he's likely to be crucified, or he or she is likely to be crucified by Donald Trump. And I don't mean in a good martyr kind of way. I mean in not your savior, crucified. I realize that's maybe harsh, but there needs to be some semblance of reality for a whole bunch of people on the progressive and Democratic side if they choose to pick apart and destroy the decisions that every candidate has made in an effort to find one that's what, pure, but doesn't stand any chance. So I understand like the purity of it, and I understand the sort of moral compass that's driving them. But I think you can step in here and talk about what Obama said.
It's a never-ending set of litmus tests, okay? It's with the progressives, first of all, they need to realize that they're only 15% of the party. The reality is that the Democratic Party, at least 50% of which, it's a party that 50% of which, at the very least, claims to be less than far left, okay? Meaning, let's get real. If you want to carry states like Pennsylvania, if you want to show up and win in states like Wisconsin and Michigan, then driving to the left of Senator Sanders is not going to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and President Obama elucidated on this recently, saying, look, if the object of the game here is to unseat Donald Trump, then we've got to stop this business of having a circular firing squad where, it, as you alluded to, it's just one litmus test after another, one varying... basically, it's a staging ground of sorts where, okay, Senator Kamala Harris, she's a black lady that was the attorney general in California. Well, because some of the people that she sent to prison were minorities, so she's not woke. And she happens to be married to a white man, so she's duly not woke. You know, when that became a crime, I don't know. But there's a problem right there. You know, again, you're not going to win the Rust Belt of working class white voters when you make it sound like marrying a white man's a bad thing, okay?
Cory Booker. Yeah. Granted, I will say
he's not married.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Bernie Sanders is 119 years old and Jewish. Joe Biden's 76, going to be 78 by the time the election rolls around. Well, at some point, I have to ask again, the progressives, all 15% of the party, okay, which is more important to you? That you manage to cram your 15% on the other 85% of the Democratic Party? The purity test is passed, but you lose the election? Or do you want to win the election and maybe have a compromise candidate? Because at this point, you've got a group of, as Speaker Pelosi reminded someone in an interview recently, there's five people in this posse, and that was AOC's own word on Instagram, posse. there's five people that are holding hostage the entire House Democrats, saying we're going to impeach regardless. And I know that's a leap in topics here, but the song remains the same.
It's the same. It's paralleled. So it's, you know, it's interesting if you could apply almost like a game theory or something like this, or just, it's like a zero sum game, right? And the issue here is what you're willing. So the reality, the reality is
everybody's going to give up something in order to move the ball.
Well, and that's it. So the reality is a progressive candidate, the statistical probability, and I'm not talking about a Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton statistical probability. I'm talking about the probability of a true progressive beating Donald Trump in 2020 is it's not going to happen. And you can't, I won't even allow anybody to say, well, you look what Trump did to Hillary. No, it doesn't apply here. So are you willing to push and cram your progressive ideology so far down everyone's throat, but lose the election, or be very happy with the progression your progressive platform has made and play the long game? I think there's I think we've lost, the one thing that's beautiful about democracy, but equally painful, is how slow it is to evolve. And that's because of the checks and balances. And that is because it is not an authoritarian type state that can make unilateral decisions to change the course for many people. So what I think progressives are failing to see here is the long-term game. I think Bernie Sanders has done a good enough job himself to bring the party, and as an independent, bring the entire left or Democratic Party farther left. This is a long game. And this is what the AOCs of the world are failing to see. They're not going to fix this overnight. So you have to ask the question, is it worth it for me to lose the election, so now we don't have anyone even remotely left-leaning in office, and it's another 8 years of Donald Trump, or I digress, but that's sort of my thought process here is, and what Obama, I think, said so poignantly, is and additionally, you know, Joe Biden just recently talked to, I think it was coal miners union, and I thought to myself, holy shit, this is it. This is the people that are actually going to make or break the 2020 election.
Yes, the Rust Belt is it.
And I realize that sounds like some revelation. It's not. I mean, I'm not a political strategist, and that's obviously what a thousand people out there would be. Well, duh. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But I think that's what we're missing here. We have all these litmus tests. We're willing to go down the road and destroy, or try to destroy, the past decisions that some of these leaders have made, who are arguably far more progressive than Donald Trump is in terms of their ideology. Yet we're willing to crucify our own. To what gain?
Look at what Donald Trump was able to do in 2016. With his base isn't going anywhere. Okay, the same folks are going to show up. If anything moves the needle whatsoever towards impeachment, his base plus some is going to be there. His base that couldn't make it, they couldn't get off of working time, everybody's going to be there, okay? Then, think about this. Sheldon Adelson, who backed the one of the casino magnates of Las Vegas, who backed Marco Rubio, sat out, one of many billionaires to sit out the race. The Kochs, okay? They're all in on Trump's behalf this go-round, okay? He's already raised over $150 million.
That's
all right?
Insane.
Now, we've got the needle moving to where the Hispanic support in both Texas and Florida, the Democrats are still, they've got dreams of sugar plum fairies in their head that Texas is somehow going to become purple. Not going to happen. Not this go-round. Hispanic support has moved in Texas and Florida towards the president, okay? Asian Americans, because of things like affirmative action, as I referenced a couple of podcasts ago, Asian Americans feel cut out of the Rainbow Coalition because they're punished by things like affirmative action. So which party do you think they're swinging towards? Needless to say, the Jewish vote is not going to increase for the Democrats this go-round. So with that, if there's no movement made towards the working class towards bringing the Rust Belt back into the fold, towards bringing unions that were felt at the very least disenfranchised last go round, or excuse me, at the very least they were disillusioned, possibly even disenfranchised, if the needle isn't moved whatsoever. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that anybody with the idea to nationalize corporations whatsoever, they're not going to win over those Rust Belt voters. They're not going to move the needle for people like Cubans who, they don't want any of that. They left all that. Okay, so these things, these dots that I just put on the map for you, it's not a pretty picture, especially if we're just determined to impeach the MFer, regardless of what the evidence ends up suggesting in the unredacted report. If we're just determined on, hey, we've got the answer, and like algebra, we're going to work backwards, well, that's great. But just remember, the reason politics is sneered at is because the art of looking for trouble, finding it, misdiagnosing it, and then misapplying the wrong remedies, okay? And that's why Speaker Pelosi so poignantly sneered at AOC recently, because she's saying, look, okay, yeah, all five of you in that posse, well, guess what? AOC and the president finally agreed on something, and that's that the VA doesn't need fixing? Okay, I don't give a damn how many tens of millions of followers she's got on Instagram. I'm going to go out on a limb and say a whole lot of her inner circle are not veterans of the U.S. military. Okay, so this all comes together to say this is a recipe for 8 years of Donald Trump. Hmm. I mean, do I exaggerate?
No, I don't. And again, I don't ever want to come across in this podcast as sort of fear-mongering or not fear-mongering, because that's not the case, but
hey, if you want Donald Trump reelected, great. I'm just saying, this
yeah,
is
exactly.
Not
it's
Democrat.
I'm a fairly optimistic person, but I'm gonna call the concerns where I'm gonna call it out where I see the concerns, and I really don't. Now, look, there's a number of things that I think viscerally, right? Okay, that I hear on the campaign trail right now that I say, wow, that's a really good idea, right? Let's just throw it out there, okay? And let's not dissect where I got this or where. Let's just take it for an example. So Elizabeth Warren comes out and says, we want to exonerate student debt. We're going to do it in a tiered system. So if you make $250,000, you're not going to pay anything. We're not going to pay for any of it. $100,000, we're going to pay for 80% of it, and so on down the line. To me, that's going to speak to a lot of people, right? Is it a radical idea? It is a radical idea. You know what's not a radical idea is to me, what I think, I guess what I'm afraid of is these particular candidates, and as we move down the line or years down the road, as we become more left and left, our reaction is just going to be to pay things off. Instead of reforming, like you said, a misdiagnosing, instead of reforming the system that got us there in the first place. Now, the question is, are we going as far to say we're going to pay back the $1.5 trillion that these students owe, and then that's it? Or is it a reaction to get the votes? What exactly is the point here? Because I think all smart people, or even just rational people, understand that there's far more to the problem just a blossoming debt burden by families and by students just to go to school. So I don't know if I articulated that well enough, but it's concerning to me that though I think Elizabeth Warren's
talking about pandering, everybody's showing up with a blank check that their mouth is writing, somebody's got a cash. Guess who's going to do that?
Yeah.
Taxpayer. It's a wonderful thing. I think it's a great idea. Okay, the idea that Ted Cruz balked at a student loan bailout, but he was okay with bailing out banks that created the problem in the first place and conservative Congress.
100%. Like I don't have a problem with it per se, because I think it's retribution.
But everything's free. That's the idea. It's like, okay, we're going to offer everything free to the Rainbow Coalition. And we're going to tax the dog shit out of the 1% who really, they're not getting at the issue. They want to tax income. That's not how the majority of the Mitt Romneys are making their money. Making money off investment, capital gains tax. They're just going to move their money overseas.
Well, even if you're just taxing income, you don't have to tax. Just leave your
Kansas to get them.
Just leave your investments where it's at. It doesn't matter. I
mean, they miss it.
Well, and who was it? There was a CEO recently that brought that up. It was actually CEO of it was a recent I think it was economist that did the interview. Anyway, the point was is they were talking about restructuring. He was talking about his income as a CEO being, you know, 300 times more than the average worker there at the firm. And he said, I don't really, you know, we have shareholders. They obviously make that call. But also you have to understand where my money is in stock incentives or in places like capital gains tax. So it was just, and I realize that's a huge tangent, not articulated well, but the point is, we make these really, we're trying to make arguments for things like taxing the 1% on income. We're trying to make it very black and white and palatable for the average person to understand. But the reality is it's far more complex than that. And we may be going about it quite the wrong way. I mean, I'll be honest with you. When she said, hey, we're going to take this debt burden off of students, this $1.5 trillion, this burden off the shoulders of families and students. The first reaction was, does that mean that I'm ultimately going to pay for the bailout of the student debt that I own? Or are we going after the 1% to pay for this? Because ultimately someone is going to pay for it. So why can't Elizabeth Warren tell me, because God bless her for trying to make my life easier. However, can we hear the plan to just make education more affordable? Because just because you take my debt burden away doesn't make it more affordable for the next person that enters the system. So are we just going to pay off the debt over and over and over and over? Because I thought it was a $1.5 trillion job and that was it. And this is the thing that I think people will actually see through when we begin to get into the debates, when we begin to dissect these. And I think it will be very easy for someone like Donald Trump to say, sounds like a good idea. And it won't take a whole lot of his circle there to have a fairly articulate, well, this would be tough for the president, but could have an articulate.
He needs one word. He needs one word and he's already got it. And it's socialism, okay? Because most people think it's communism, okay? Very few folks have actually bothered to read the Communist Manifesto. Several things about communism. Number one, it's predicated on violent overthrow. Number two, it's predicated on atheism. Bernie Sanders is Jewish and is not for the possession or the nationalization of all corporations. So he's not a communist. But it doesn't matter.
Yeah, okay? and socialism isn't the S word that it has been.
No, it's not however, George McGovern we're talking about here, but that's all that Trump's got to do.
But it is true, especially
artificial
when
artificial intelligence is no match for natural stupidity.
And to be honest with you, I think there is that middle of the sort of centrist, maybe the almost independent. We'll just say that the U.S. coal miner, the middle-aged, or the trucker, right? The middle-aged
coal miner's
trucker.
Daughter. Let's go there.
Oh boy. The middle-aged Woo! Trucker, the middle-aged coal miner, the middle-aged who might not,
their IQs came back negative.
Might not see a whole lot of the value in the student debt, right? But if he hears Donald Trump say socialism, there's a chance that, and I'm not trying to insult his intelligence, I'm just going to say he gets why he gets why that might be bad.
Wait, the president or the coal miner?
The coal miner. The coal miner. Gets
well,
why,
I already did that.
Yeah, gets why socialism is bad and makes the call to go back to Trump because he doesn't see the value in just repaying off kids' debt. It just worries me. I think the bottom line, in conclusion,
he's already going to do that for his own. He doesn't want to do it for everybody else's. I mean, think about it. That's the way it's going to be framed, okay? That's just the reality.
Yeah, and I realize I've rambled. Maybe it's because I've been studying all day and whatnot. But I think I've hopefully tried to articulate what bothers me about all of this, because ultimately I do think that the Elizabeth Warrens of the world mean well. I think they do. I think her consumer protection, I think that's good. I hope.
Actually loves Native Americans. She meant nothing by it.
I hope that, you know, in a couple podcast episodes, you and I can talk about like crony capitalism, where we are currently today, free market versus where we currently are. And I think there's a lot of good out there. I think that consumer protections aren't. I really do.
There's good out there.
I think that ultimately, like, consumer protections aren't inherently some socialist left leaning progressive thing. I think that the ultimate goal would be to create competition and to create more competition, to break up maybe the consolidation that we have in the market today, the Citizens Uniteds of the world kind of thing. And I think you and I agree on that a lot, because ultimately that's something, when it comes to regulation or deregulation or anti-regulation, I think there's a disagreement that you and I have there. However, I think the idea, our ultimately idea of a more competitive American market makes sense. I think we both agree on that. And so I think ultimately there's a lot of things that they have to say that are good, but ultimately it's who is up against Donald Trump. And the problem is, I think 90% of the people in the field right now don't stand a chance. 95%.
The scale of North Korea to America, how free are you tonight? You know, it's going to be, look, you know, all right, with Super Bowl size audiences watching the last trio of presidential debates between Donald and Hillary, they weren't tuning in for Hillary. Can you imagine? Oh, my God. If it's Joe Biden versus Donald Trump. All right, Joe, this is a big effing deal. Biden versus Donald, grabbing him by the Trump. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, if we're just going up one for ones here, I look at Donald Trump, Elizabeth Warren, and I'm already like, oh God. Even a Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump. Yeah. I'm like, oh dude, you're far more intelligent than the guy, but he's going to appeal to the entertainment value of it. And
that's what I mean. Yeah. Who else but Joe Biden can really go toe to toe with this man in the way that
what's the government do with
hackers, right? The ones that don't want to go to prison, they work for the government. Okay. How do you beat swashbucklers? You get a former swashbuckler. All right. How do you win this type of knife fight against a knife fighter? You don't send a gentleman or a lady of gentility in there. You send in a knife fighter. Well, who's the only one they got?
Yeah. Yep.
You're gonna send Beto O'Rourke?
No, it's.
Come on.
Yeah, you need a household name. You need experience, and because there, someone like a Joe Biden, regardless of whether or not you agree with his politics, he does command some sort of respect for the amount of.
Do you want to win or not would be my question.
That is, and I think you're very right.
Because don't get me wrong, I admire Senator Booker's approach, coming in saying, hey, we're not going to get in the mud. He launched his candidacy on love. I'm serious, and I'm not mocking him. Okay, that was the phrase to use. Awesome, all right? This is not that time. Okay? Everything is beautiful. Great. That's a wonderful, lovely track, all right? But it ain't going to stand up to, I can't get no satisfaction, all right?
You're saying save it for 2024.
Sure. His time is yet to come. Senator Sanders is a great, perhaps, alternative, but I'm saying if I'm a Democrat or I'm a strategist for the Democrats, I'm saying who, if your family's life depended upon it, do you think could beat Donald Trump in November 2020? Frame it that way, Nate.
Yeah.
If your wife, if your family's lives depended upon it, who are you going to send at the ballot yesterday? You had to make the call right now. Who's going to beat him? Okay, Bernie Sanders would be my second choice.
Who's my first?
Not because I like him less, but my first as far as this field of 84 candidates.
All right, let's
beat him.
Let's say it on 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay. Joe Biden.
Joe Biden. Exactly.
Three. Is it three? Two and one, and then go.
Yeah. Ready. Go. Yeah. I think we said it. I think we already said it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, seriously. You know, I don't want the world to be framed that way. Okay, because some of the best causes I've ever fought for were lost causes. All right. But so do I think there's a beautiful candidacy to be had in a Senator Booker? I admire him for having the guts to come out and say, we're not going to go low. We're going to run this thing with love and positivity. I'm not mocking him. I think that's a wonderful idea. Mm-hmm. Okay. Senator Kamala Harris, I think she brings a lot to the table. Okay. Senator Warren, kudos to her for being awash in white papers. I mean, policy analysis after policy analysis. But the knife fighting that it's going to take, I mean, we're talking about Trump has no fatigue, okay? And yeah. He is someone that he doesn't just survive scandal. He embraces
he
it.
He does.
I mean, we're talking about someone who has survived obstruction charges by the skin of his teeth. And what is he doing continuously? But harassing and possibly, arguably, trying to intimidate a future key witness for impeachment proceedings in Don McGahn.
Yep.
I mean,
he's a whole nother level.
Someone, and he knows what he's doing, okay? It's not stupidity. The man has an instinct for this sort of thing. We're talking about somebody who admitted to what was said in the report on him. Then in the first month of his presidency, he said, look, I want to approach every day like it's an episode of television. And he means that.
Yeah.
And it explains a lot, frankly. But this is not that game, okay, for a – I don't want to, again, I'm not trying to mock Senator Booker, so I'm not saying kumbaya to be disrespectful by any means.
No, right? I don't think you are for a second. I think
I admire it.
I agree. I think it's the time, it's the right time, but not the right platform for it to happen.
Cometh the hour, cometh the man or woman, okay? And you know, I think Kamala Harris, amongst the ladies thus far in the race, I think she has the charisma to do it.
Yeah, the tenacity and charisma to do
it. Yes. Yes, the tenacity is probably the better phrase. If amongst the ladies, I would say that she's the one. Overall, though, I mean, if it's not Joe Biden, I'd say you'd have to go with Senator Sanders or Senator Harris, but I get why people would say on a number of levels why they don't want that. But my question to the Democrats would be, once again, what's more important to you? Being right and looking like, hey, we come out with a clean cut gleam because we nominated somebody so woke that all of us couldn't help but feel good until election day and you lost? Or do you want to win with perhaps a less than perfect picture-perfect choice of the Rainbow Coalition, okay? Because, again, the picture I painted before, that's not a rumor about the Hispanic vote moving in Texas and Florida. That's not a rumor about the Asian-American vote feeling disenfranchised because of affirmative action, okay? Those are just little cliff notes, but all those things. Let's say that the Hispanic vote in Texas and Florida shifts 1%, 2% President Trump. Well, there you've erased any gains that you make. If the Jewish vote moves by 5 to 7%, okay? That's enough in places like Pennsylvania that if you don't have somebody like a Joe Biden that can grab some of that union vote, that can bring back some of the purple vote in Wisconsin and Michigan, if you send a Beto O'Rourke in there,
yeah,
okay, well, I'll see you at Trump's second inauguration.
Indeed. Well, hey, man, we're over 30 minutes. And I'm getting up early, and I think we hammered home this one. I tend to like doing these. Well, it seems like you're very passionate, well articulated, and on these off the cuff ones,
bullshit.
I get halfway through these, and I'm stumbling over myself. But
well, the issue is, all right. Look, I'm not gonna lie, but our passwords got hacked, and this is the third damn time I've had to rename this cat. So.
Well,
I'm fired up.
Well, noted. Noted.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Well,
I don't get it. I'm just kidding.
God. Well, as always, my friend. As always, my friend, it's an honor and privilege to do this with you.
Thanks for having me back again. I promise I'll be better behaved next time.
No. It was all good. So, until next time, my friend.
Au revoir. We'll see you.